This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have two sponsors for the show, those are XMA and Jam Software, and I'll tell you more about both of those as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Good, just got back not minutes ago from a field trip at our school. We had gone, it's called the Chattanooga Ducks, and it's not like, it sounds like obviously the fish, but these are like army vehicle ducks that were built like in the 40s, and you can take them and you ride in the Chattanooga, the Tennessee River, and whole big thing. But getting, so I went because I have a driver's license and a FACE.
Okay.
So that was the big qualification for teachers that they needed to help drive some of the vans. And so I drove 11 kids in a van, and that was normally not a huge deal, but on the way back, there was all sorts of traffic. So it took me an hour to make about a 12-minute drive, so with 11 students in my car. So that was it was real fun.
Yeah, there are days like that, aren't there?
Yes, but made it back, and coming up on the end of school, so that's fun. But today was a monumental day at our school for a negative reason.
Oh, dear.
Today, for the first time since I have been here, we have a broken iPad.
Oh, no.
So, first broken iPad we've ever had.
Shut it down. So, shut the whole thing down.
Yep. So, that's pretty good. We have 80, and we've had them for like 4 years, and they only had one break. So,
wow.
Considering next week is the last week of school, it's not too shabby.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I kind of want to keep it and like maybe frame it in my office. So I don't know. Like, so just, you know, I don't know. Just do something fun with it.
Well, I often thought about keeping the one that we had one boy once who his mother drove over his iPad with a Land Rover. And I thought that's the best disaster we've ever had. So it was all dented on the back and it's crushed. And I took it to the Apple Store, and the guy at the Apple Store said, "You'll never believe how often this actually happens." It's like, what? You know? But apparently people drive over their iPads all the time with their car, so it wasn't that special.
Yeah, so, yeah, fun day. I found out about that this morning, and, like, you know, that's pretty good luck.
So I had a busy week. Have had a busy week. Just told you I've been writing the timetable for school, so that's easily the most intellectually demanding thing you do all year in school, is write the timetable. It's like the world's worst Sudoku puzzle, because it doesn't actually have a proper solution most times. So that was today, so if I make mistakes, if I say things wrong, that's because I have no brain left to do anything else. But more interestingly, more relevantly, I suppose, this week I gave a presentation on iOS 9.3. So, Bradley, you were saying that you had Apple people giving a sort of demonstration of Apple School Manager and so on. I wasn't able to do that because I don't have access yet. But there's an IT managers meeting that happens every so often usually in Edinburgh, actually, in Scotland, for the IT managers at independent schools. And I presented at that just about what's new with iOS 9.3 education features and so on. And on the same day, I went to the Apple Store and they told me that my battery was fine in my iPhone, but I had to wipe it. So this is the kind of the payback for running iOS betas, I think. So after I finished my presentation, I went to the Genius Bar just right across the road from where we were in Edinburgh. And the sort of usual first level Genius Bar advice these days, which is, oh, there's something wrong with your phone. You better erase it and set it up from scratch again, which I didn't really have to back up data, Bradley, but it was just such a, you know, the amount of things you've got set up on your phone now that you just have to recreate is crazy, you know. So I'm still, it's like a new phone, it's like a new device to me. I can't find anything, nothing's set up right anymore, so.
From a support perspective, that has to be the last resort and not the first resort. And so, like, when you're dealing with, like, PCs, like laptops, you know, Apple, just general, like, non-iPad, tablet form factors, like, that's always the last resort, is wipe it clean.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a lot of the first advice today, and that's very time consuming.
It is incredibly time consuming. I mean, I was kind of blown away last night when I finally did it. I was like, it's like 3 hours later and I'm not really done yet, you know, because you've got to unpair your Apple Watch, download a 2 gigabyte package to some Mac somewhere, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just, you know, if you're setting up from scratch again, you know, it's not just your apps, but it's your 1Password, your notification center configuration, all your notification settings, logging into multiple apps, you know, Netflix, Spotify, Omni apps, Google apps, you know, is crazy. So I kind of feel like one of the things I really like to see in iOS 10 is much more kind of granular backup and restore. You know, like the fact, even though I had a backup, I apparently couldn't use any of it because, you know, iOS is just backup everything, restore everything, and nothing in between. And of course, health data was all lost as well. I'm fortunate I don't really have to care about that. But these are the kind of the frustrating things, you know, that you still feel iOS needs another step up to be a full standalone computer system sometimes.
Yeah, the health data is a mess because it is only backed up to iCloud and not synced with iCloud. So if you ever do want to do a fresh restore of your iOS device, even for non-support reasons, like you just get a new phone and just want to do it, that's taking privacy too far. I mean, these are encrypted backups with iCloud. Like, they should include your health data. And in reality, the things you're backing up to iCloud are dramatically more, to me, privacy conscious, or syncing with iCloud can be dramatically more privacy conscious than, like, my workout activities.
Yeah. I mean, is it a regulatory thing that if Apple were backing up that kind of sensitive personal information, they would have to go through a whole other level of compliance for their data centers or something? I don't know.
I mean, RunKeeper, like, my RunKeeper app has maps of where I've ran. Mm-hmm. And it's all synced with my RunKeeper account.
Yeah, I mean, you've in your iCloud photo library, you've got geotagged photographs of where your children are. You know, go with that.
This is like one of those situations where they've just taken privacy too far. And it's hurts the user experience because, yeah, you don't care about the health data. Mm-hmm. But gosh, if you're someone that's like maybe marathon training, you better believe like you're into that data and what that means to you. Yeah. And so it's one of those things, it becomes a second class citizen to like a RunKeeper or to a Fitbit or to a Garmin type device, because it just makes it seem like a second class fitness device, because there should never be a situation where you have to wipe away a year's worth of health app data for any reason. And certainly as the health APIs grow and they're used for not just like tracking fitness, but a lot of medical stuff too, like tracking headaches and, you know, as things like that grow, losing that data is potentially very harmful to your analysis tools.
Yeah. And of course, there's no way that you can recreate that information as well. You know, it's not like even apps, you could buy the apps again, you could buy the music again, but you can't. It's like photographs, you can't recreate historical data like that. So that was, you know, that's just kind of the most extreme example of a general annoyance now with not just the Genius Bar advice, but also the tools available for troubleshooting iOS, is that it's just frustrating that, you know, here's a problem. And what the problem was basically that once you got to about 40% on my phone, the battery would just jump to 15% and start giving you low power warnings and so on. And then when you plugged it in, it would jump back up again. Basically, the battery's just behaving in a strange fashion. And guy takes one look at it, ran a diagnostic on it to see, you know, how many cycles has the battery been through? What's the battery health meter like? And that all checked out. So he's like, right, just wipe your phone and start from scratch. Like, is that all you got? You know, and the answer is yes, that is all he's got. You know, it's not really his fault. It's not necessarily bad advice, but it's disappointing that that's the only advice that you can give, isn't it?
Well, and I guess, so in reality, we're looking for better debugging tools for Apple Store geniuses and then technicians like ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it shouldn't be like, okay, these numbers check out, so it's clearly something in the phone, wipe your phone. Like, no, like, that should be the last resort. I mean, like, even on, you know, OS X, there are 1,000 things you can do, troubleshoot. You know, repair disk permissions, repair disk, you know, reset these configurations, delete that preference file. There are 1,000 things you can do, even if it involved, like, things like plugging it up to a Mac and running some weird application on it from Apple. Like, but it should be something, like, the equivalent of, like, Apple software diagnostic or Apple hardware test, like, for iPad. Like, something like that should be available for technicians and not just say, hey, student, like, I know you got a big test tomorrow, but if you want to fix your battery, let's wipe your iPad and let's not restore it from scratch. So hope you have a fun night. No.
Yeah, I hope everything's in the cloud somehow. Yep.
Right. But anyways, so Let's take our first sponsor of the night. I want to welcome back our friends at XMA. They are a leading Apple solution expert for education. As an Apple solution expert for education, XMA is perfectly positioned to support your institution with deployment of Mac and iPad. They have over 30 years of experience, and they've created this unique program called the All Learn program. So All Learn with Apple supports you with planning, financing, and managing your iPad and Mac deployment. They use their accredited trainers to deliver Apple professional development workshops to teachers and staff to ensure you get the best results for your Apple products, for your investment, and your deployment. If you're interested in learning more about that, it's xma.co.uk/out of school. Or you can follow them on Twitter at WeAreXMA and learn more about the All Learn program with Apple. So again, if you listen to our deployment series and know that you need some help with that, XMA is the type of company you want to look at. So thanks to XMA for sponsoring Out of School this week.
You bet. Just one other thing to say, Bradley, about the week before we dive into what we're going to talk about this week. Where I was doing the presentation, we were in the Microsoft offices in Edinburgh, where I was treated to the Microsoft Immersion Center, which is they have a kind of room in that area that's it's kind of built out as a, you know, sort of like a kind of a house, and you go in and you sit down and you can see like home automation stuff or tablets or PCs or TVs or whatever it is that they've got going. So we got a little presentation of that, and it was mostly because the audience was IT managers, it was pretty technical, but I kind of got my first glimpse into what's involved in deploying a Windows network, and it was quite scary, to be honest with you. And it was quite funny to sort of be in a room of people who, you know, from time to time have suggested to me that iOS is difficult to deploy, and then I saw what those guys are doing to manage their Windows environments, and I thought, well, you know, don't tell me iOS is hard to deploy. That's hard to deploy. It was quite surprising to me just how many moving parts there were to keep a Windows network up and running.
Yeah, it's a whole different beast, and often they have different goals. When you're like a big, I mean, if you're doing a 10,000 seat Dell like PC deployment, I mean, you often are like, they are very restricted devices. You might even like have the internet might be whitelisted to only a handful of websites. It's, you know, Outlook setup. I mean, it is a different beast in itself. And again, it's often different goals, but yeah. It gets very expensive. Like you start pricing out some of those, like some of the deployment tools that companies, I know Dell sells a lot. I mean, plenty of companies sell these tools to help you with managing PCs, and they can get downright expensive.
Yeah. And it's just the number of different bits you need as well. But it seemed to me that it's quite interesting to look at it from a different point of view, because most of the things you were talking about were like how to keep, you know, software up to date on the devices, you know, various, you know, Office packages, drivers, the operating system itself, you know. And, you know, from our point of view, iOS is such a kind of uniform experience, you know. We're not looking at, you know, 10 different categories of operating system update you might want to apply to iOS. It's just, are you on this number or are you on that number? And if so, push it up. And of course, now with device enrollment, we've got the ability to do that remotely, which is quite nice. But there's a lot more kind of being done to the machine from outside. Whereas with iOS, you're essentially signaling the machine to do something to itself, and the tools are kind of built in there. So it was just interesting to see it from a different point of view and just get an idea of what other people are working on. And a big, big topic of conversation throughout the whole day was schools moving from on-premise to the cloud. And in some ways, Microsoft's sort of making them do it, whether or not they want to, in many cases. And it's a lot of schools get interesting challenges ahead. I mean, it's not just businesses that are sort of, you know, I feel like the world is kind of in the situation where many people have invested heavily in computers in the way that we did computers, you know, in the early 2000s, you know, on-premise client server, managed desktops and so on, a little bit of Wi-Fi, and the world has completely changed. And there are schools and there are also businesses that have really not made that change yet. And, you know, I think it's quite easy for people, you and me, Bradley, to sit and think, well, the world's mobile now, we've all done that, it's fine. But in fact, the world hasn't gone mobile. You know, at least the business world hasn't really gone mobile, even if the consumer world already has. And there's a lot of work ahead for a lot of people to kind of get to this situation where the sort of zero trust networking, the cloud, mobility, access from anywhere with data protection is their normal world. And that's it's quite an interesting few years ahead for quite a lot of organizations, I think.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if I was building a school now, it's the cloud. You would start with everything in the cloud, and then we'll kind of work backwards from that if you had to. Just makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I did learn one cool thing though, which was I learned many cool things, but one thing I saw that I thought I might use in the future is I was shown a demo of Azure Remote App, which is kind of a way for, you know, we talked before about using Amazon Workspaces to get a virtualized Windows desktop on your iPad. Well, Azure Remote App is kind of like that, except instead of giving you the full Windows desktop, it sort of extracts individual applications and presents them to you as sort of native-looking kind of iOS apps. So you do this through the Microsoft Remote Desktop app on iOS, and essentially you open it up. There's icons for the whatever Windows applications you've published to your users, and you can just tap one and it just fires up, you know, the Windows version of Excel on your iPad, which is really cool. And the performance was great, and I found it much easier to use, you know, with a touch screen, because the version of Office that was available there had Office on Windows has a kind of toggle where you can switch it between a layout that's slightly more optimized for touch. Its targets are bigger, spaced out, and so on. And also things like text selection were interpreted as touch text selection, if you know what I mean. Like it was a bit more like iOS where you tap a word and selection handles would come up. And this is in the desktop version of Windows. And you could drag it text selection, things like that. So I'm thinking quite possibly we'll switch to Azure Remote App next year for the scenarios where we previously used Amazon Workspaces, because not only is it easier to use an iPad, but it's also cheaper as well and a little bit more performant, I think. So that's something to be investigated, and we'll maybe do another show on that once I get that rolled out. It was really cool. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that will be interesting. It comes up, and understanding the pricing model, I think, would be big for a lot of schools, and knowing just what it would do to their budget to be able to have that in their back pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
So, main topic for tonight is we thought it would be good, I think we've done this maybe once before, is to kind of do a throwdown of like website platforms. And this is not meant to be 100% exhaustive list of everything you could do. This is like the 6 or 7 that like we're familiar with and that like where we know of. So, if you're listening and we're not mentioning the ones that you're familiar with. Like, I'm sorry. It's not anything personal. These are just like the ones we know about and we use, so I don't feel comfortable. Like, for example, Joomla is not on this list. But often many of the things I would say about WordPress self-hosted would be applicable for Joomla, for example. So if anything, we're kind of covering like broad platforms instead of like specific CMSs. Is that fair?
Sounds good. Yep. And of course, we'll have a wee chat as well about the sort of principles of what you might want to do if you're running a school website.
You know, absolutely.
What to look for.
So, to me, and the reason this kind of came up for me is we like to redo our design about every 2 years just to keep it fresh. And that also like, kind of forces us to take an analysis of our content and like understand the flow of websites and like, I guess, the information architecture, like how things are laid out to best serve our prospective families and new families. So first thing I would consider is what skills do you have in-house? Do you have like an in-house like, graphics person? Do you have someone in-house that's like a WordPress junkie on the side? Do you have someone that writes plugins on your on your staff? Like those are the things you need to take stock of because the more in-house expertise you have, the more likely you may choose a self-hosted where you can customize everything.
Yep, absolutely. And another thing to think about is, do you have a photographer on staff or somebody, maybe even a parent in the school who is, in that business as well? That's another thing that, you know, in some ways that's perhaps the photography turns over for us more than the content because, you know, you take pictures of particular pupils for the website and then they leave school and you've got to find new pictures and so on. So proper photography for your website is quite important too.
Absolutely. We use parents for that. Like we have a handful of parents that are photographers by trade. So that's absolutely something we try to change up often. Next thing, like your goal. I think it's important to like write down the goals of your website. Is your website like mainly just for like prospective families, and you have a whole backend system for current families. And so if that's true, then like how you lay out your information is dramatically different. It may be built around everything about like basically being a brochure for your school, and then existing families are click here to log in to our parent portal, and everything is behind that wall.
Yep. I think over you know, the time I've been working at the school, our website has changed. It's gone much more from being a resource for existing families to being prospectives for new families. And I think because we have other channels to communicate with existing families, but the school website's the first place that new families hit, and giving them not just a good impression, but also the information they need to decide whether or not to contact you next is pretty important. And I think one of the ways that we've often been guided in what we put on our website and what we highlight is what kind of phone calls come to the school, you know, and if people are phoning up, we used to get all the time, people would phone up and they would ask us when the holidays were, even though we sent home a calendar at the start of the year and so on. But we took the time to put, you know, we sync a Google calendar onto our website now, and you can download that piece of paper that we sent home. You can download that on the website and so on. So there's now a dedicated page for holidays and the school calendar. And the fees was another one that people ask all the time. So there's now a page for the fees and things like that. Just using your call log to guide what you need to make more prominent on your website is a good idea.
Next thing is, I'll say mobile usage from front end and back end. So you're looking at your stats of your current website, like, you know, what percent are you seeing are coming from tablets and smartphones versus, and how do you plan? Do you plan on wanting to be able to update it from a smartphone or a tablet on the back end? So understanding how, because we would like to say that like websites are easily done from mobile devices today, but as you'll hear throughout the show, like that is not the case. That is one of the last things for me personally that is still something I really only want to do on a desktop is manage websites.
Yeah. And I think as you start to delegate more responsibility for updating the website throughout your school, that's going to become more and more important. I've got some stories to tell about that when it comes to things like class blogging and so on. That's been a real challenge for us actually for a couple of years now, and we'll talk about some ideas I've got for that later on.
Do you want to host it is another thing. Like, do you have a server on site you want to host it on? Do you want to host it like on a Media Temple server, or do you want like an all-in-one platform like a Squarespace? So deciding that is something to consider. Along with the security and the maintenance of that server and that installation.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a situation where, you know, if your school internet goes down, your school website is also down. You know, I think unless you're very, you know, well provisioned for server capabilities in your school, I would think probably going into the cloud is the right thing to do, and possibly even, you know, going to a whole managed platform like a Squarespace is something that I think most schools at most scales would probably be well served to do. I know some of the very biggest schools are, you know, might even have a web team, you know, but we're certainly not in that position.
And then the last thing is integration with other things that you use. You mentioned Google Calendar, mm-hmm. various social networking tools that you use, like Flickr, you know, various photo hosting sites, Vimeo, YouTube. So just understanding like how you use different websites and how you can integrate those in is something you want to consider.
Yep. So what's next?
Let's look at WordPress.com. So okay. WordPress is a very popular website platform. I think last I heard it was like 18 to 20% of the web is powered by WordPress in some form or fashion. Wow. So WordPress.com is like the hosted version of WordPress. And it is definitely one of the cheaper options. Like, you know, for less than like $100 a year, you can get a domain name, which most schools already own that. But you can get like, you know, your hosting. And very kind of simple to get started. They host it for you. You get a decent amount of you can choose themes, and you get a decent amount. There's no server to maintain, so there's no security updates to apply, and that certainly applies to self-hosted WordPress. But with that, like, you don't get the plugins of WordPress, which is half of, for me, the attraction of a WordPress type platform. But again, it certainly is an option. It's a good option. Like, our out of school website is hosted on WordPress.com. It is yep. a fine option, and we've never had it go down. iOS here is okay. Their mobile app is adequate at best. I mean, you're not gonna. I would not say you are going to do major content updates from it. In fact, like on the iPad, I still use the back end web CMS of WordPress to make changes. I feel like it's better than the app.
Yeah, that can sometimes happen, can't it? I feel like, you know, what I mean by does this thing have a good iOS app and what most people hear when I ask that question are two different things. The problem I always have is that I really mean, like, can this platform be entirely managed from iOS? Yes or no? And most people sort of hear that question and they think, well, yeah, you can type out some text and put it on the site from iOS, so therefore that's a yes. But in fact, I'm asking the question, you know, can I use the system and never touch a desktop computer? And the answer to that is almost always no. So that's something that remains a bit of a challenge, I think. And it's fine for the absolute basics, but sometimes you want, you know, I want to do a complex layout and I've got to go, you know, wait till I get to a computer to do that kind of thing. And that's not just me anymore. That's starting to become something that all of my teachers who put things on the school website, they're saying, I've got to wait, go back to my computer and I just forget to do it because I get busy with something else. So the sort of immediacy of working from mobile devices is something that's it's not just increasingly important, it's basically a deal breaker for me if that doesn't work. And that's where some of the challenges come in.
I would say it's like decent for typing a small blog and typo updates, yeah. Fixing typos. That's so. Next thing is a self-hosted WordPress website. Now, this is probably, if you say we've got basically an unlimited budget, we have a very specific vision on what we want, and we can hire the best people to do it, mm-hmm. You are probably going with a self-hosted WordPress website. You can really customize this to whatever you can afford to pay for. And, you know, obviously you can buy themes, but there are companies that will come in and you can tell them what you want. They will build a custom theme. Then they will build custom plugins for you. And all this can be done, you know, within the system. This is what it's for. But, now, and I'll say, we do this right now. Our website is a self-hosted WordPress website. If you are, I'm adequate at this stuff. I'm not a designer by any means, and I'm probably the most advanced person on our staff. We've had to hire twice this year our designer back to kind of implement some things for us. I found that, like, if you try to get outside of just basic text editing, like text updates, it can be difficult. Like, just replacing, we have, like, a rotating parent testimonial thing on our homepage. Like, it's brainerdbaptistschool.org if anybody wants to look at it. And like the plugin updated and it broke it, and then like it's just quirky to add parents. And again, I think the difference here is if the company we hired used a pre-built theme to make all this happen. Where if you are really really serious about this and you have a big budget, someone's gonna build you a parent testimonial plugin kind of thing where you're gonna be able to, like, you know, it's gonna be customized like a Brainerd Baptist School parent testimonial plugin or a Cedar School's testimonial plugin, and you're going to say, it's going to say upload photo here, copy and paste testimonial here, and it's just going to pop it into the system. So again, it's difficult to do this. This is the most difficult aspect of it, I think, but you can also do the most here in reality. You can do whatever you want or whatever you can pay for.
Yeah, you're essentially running a development platform at this point, and you know, whatever kind of skills you've got or money you've got, you can get what you want there. And I think that's, you know, is one step above just writing raw HTML yourself, in the sense that you do have a back-end CMS, but you can present a lot of that content in just exactly whatever way you want. My concern always with self-hosted WordPress is just security, because there's historically been, you know, difficult times with WordPress and security and self-hosted blogs, self-hosted sites. I suppose, do you know that there are techniques to do that now that are better or something? I'm not sure.
It's getting a lot better in recent mm-hmm. years. The updates happen often and they are very fast. And we update our plugins often. You can even set them automatic. But like the update, WordPress updates are very, very easy to apply. And we've never had a situation where like they've borked our website. And we have gotten hacked once, but it wasn't on our front end. It was on our back end. And it was actually not our website. It was more of the server that was on at the hosting company. It's like it was actually on Rackspace and their account got messed up. It's still, web security is still a concern, but it's not like it was where if you didn't install the WordPress security update like within 5 minutes, your yeah. site was hacked. Like it's come a long way, but it's still, you just have to stay on top of it.
For sure.
That goes like I make sure our plugins stay up to date. And you know, sometimes that's the expense of knowing they're 100% compatible with that version of WordPress.
Yeah.
But iOS is pretty much the same here. It's the same app. You can add WordPress.com or self-hosted WordPress updates. Again, this is what it is. Like, it's not perfect, but you probably have the most flexibility overall here, depending on your budget.
Okay.
So, let's thank our last sponsor for the night. It's the great folks at Jamf Software with the Casper Suite. They are a longtime out-of-school sponsor, and we certainly are big fans of theirs here at Out of School. Fraser and I, both customers ourselves. They allow you to manage and power widespread use of Apple technologies in your school. Macs, iPhones, iPads, Apple TVs, they sell it. You can manage it. It's a great, great, great product. They have a hosted option, or you can self-host it on your server on site at Mac Mini Colo, Mac Stadium, Amazon EC2. Like, pretty much you can host this almost anywhere. So if you're looking at an iPad deployment or a Mac deployment this fall, highly, highly recommend you check them out. They have they actually have full support for iOS 9.3 features today. They announced full support like earlier this week as of this recording. And again, I think this is the difference between picking someone that views Apple as their main priority versus someone that it's just something else that they do.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of envy at that meeting I was at. I was presenting about Apple Classroom, and I actually demoed Apple Classroom. And a lot of people come up to me after just going, how come you've got Apple Classroom working? I said, well, our MDM supported it, 3 weeks ago. And they're like, yeah, I'm still waiting for Lightspeed to catch up and so on and so on. So I was pleased to be a Jamf Software customer that day.
Yeah, so check them out, jampsoftware.com, and tell them that you heard about them from Out of School. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show. Next platform is, no surprise, is Squarespace. Now, I'll preface this by saying that they are a past Out of School sponsor for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I have 10 websites that I manage for various things. They're all in Squarespace. When I log in, I have a list of accounts that I manage through them. It is an incredible platform. But it does have its limits.
And I think one of those limits is mobile. They do have mobile apps. And I write my blog every week in the Squarespace mobile app on iPad. But, for example, it still doesn't support iPad Pro. And it's something that I struggle sometimes to be convinced that Squarespace are absolutely focused on mobile. I mean, they do a great job of the front end of mobile. The site's responsive and it works well on different platforms. But in terms of the back end stuff, they have a very rich and complex HTML interface for managing your website. And sometimes that struggles a little bit in mobile devices, particularly ones that are lower powered. And their mobile apps, while, and this is also true of other solutions we'll try and talk about, they try and do a lot with their mobile app, but they don't do it all, completely reliably. And I think one of my big beefs with a lot of the mobile stuff here is that reliability is not great. You can do a lot of things, but it doesn't always actually get to the website and publish properly. So that has sometimes been an issue with Squarespace as well.
As you mentioned, all the templates are responsive. And I'll say, like, if you're the type of school that has, like, very little in-house expertise and, mm-hmm. like, the receptionist is going to be the one updating all the content, and it's just like something else that's been tacked on to his or her job. It's not really their expertise. I think Squarespace is probably the easiest place to get started. It's the place where you will screw up the least, and mm-hmm. it will look the best.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that it's easy to do a nice thing on Squarespace. It really is.
So yeah, Squarespace, and again, it's very, very inexpensive. It's all one platform. They, obviously, they have plans that start at like $8 a month, but most schools will want to kind of bump up to the business plan. They do have built-in commerce. It's very, very easy to implement as well. So you could have like an online school store. So again, they're very, very easy to do that as well. Next two are two specific school websites. So the first one is a company called Final Sight, and I let me just say this is the Cadillac solution. It is. They are very, very, very expensive. They build some incredible websites, and they have a lot of features built for schools. They offer like a learning management system. They have the online enrollment piece. They do a lot of things well, and it's very, very easy to use. It is very, 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 very expensive, and it is not for the schools that have a web budget of $5,000 for design.
I personally had never heard of Final Sight before. I think it's maybe more of a US thing. I don't think I've ever heard anybody mention that, but it's some of the prices I had a look at were quite surprising.
Yeah. So again, they did some great stuff. A lot of their websites have won many, a lot of awards. There's something I wish they would do, and I will come back to that on our next one. The next one is School Site from RenWeb. Now, here's a cool thing they do. Your monthly pricing for this is, you know, this is an all-in-one platform like Final Site where they do the hosting. They have like their design fee, so like it starts out at like $795, and that's a basic template. And these are all built for schools. And then there's a $1,500 plan that gives you like one of their themes that you can customize with different things. And then you can go up to a custom theme for like $7,500, which is still very affordable in reality. But then they base your monthly price on your enrollment numbers. And so I feel that that's like a nice way to do it, because a school that's got like 5,000 students can probably afford a different website than a school with 100 students.
Yes, very true.
So I feel like this is, you know, and I know some of our school associations are that way. Like they base your yearly dues on your enrollment number. I think they actually will do it on your annual budget numbers, just to like kind of keep it in line with what you can probably afford.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're a RenWeb customer on the back end, they have very, very nice integration with that. Mm-hmm. And they will actually rescan your back end website to match your front end. So it's really nice integration. It feels similar to Final Site, but honestly, just a ton cheaper. Like it really is like at our school's size, like it was going to be like $110 a month for the hosting. And that includes like all of their software updates, all the features. That has a school store built in as well. So, and then I felt like the design fees were fair. I mean, again, you're getting a kind of a pre-built template, but they're skinning it to match your school. Obviously, it's your school's photos, your school's colors. I felt like it was a fair pricing model.
Good.
Weebly was the next one. Now, I have not had too much experience with this, so I know you. I think you guys use this.
Yep. But we moved on to Weebly a couple of years ago. We had a rough time with our website where we first went to Squarespace, and it was around about the time, I think, when Squarespace 6 came out, and there's a lot of difficulties around that, and it just put a lot of people off right at that time. So we sort of quickly redid the website again in Weebly. On the recommendation of a few people. And I mean, to be honest with you, the basic website on Weebly is fine, right? The basic static pages and the navigation is just okay. It's not, I don't love it, but it's done and it's there and it's fine. The biggest problem we've had is that we've used school blogs for a very long time, and at least in our primary department, maybe not so much in secondary, but in primary, they've become a major kind of channel of homeschool communication, where teachers will take photographs, you know, write information about what the classes are doing, and parents will look at the blog and they will get that information. But we have really, really, really struggled with Weebly in terms of using their iOS apps, which have been, quite honestly, a total nightmare from start to finish, because, like I said before, they've tried to put in all the things you could do on their platform in their iOS app, and basically none of them work reliably. The blogging tools, you know, they sometimes error out, sometimes they work, sometimes they post the blog and give you an error message at the same time, so you do it again and you get a duplicate. But the biggest problem by far we have is that when teachers want to upload a lot of photographs, say like maybe 10 photographs to a post, it just fails. You know, 70-80% of the time it fails. And honestly, Weebly support have been no help in this whatsoever. There's things like, well, you know, restart your iPhone, or try again, or something like that. It's not at all useful information, and it's just really frustrating. And to be honest with you, this is where we're at the stage now where I'm thinking we need to take our blogs, like separate the blogs from the website again, and do something that we know works on mobile for the blogs. Because the thing is, these are teachers, particularly primary teachers, who primarily what they're doing is they're sharing photographs of what happened in school with home, and we're looking for a platform to do that. And we've got a situation where all of our parents are very happy, in fact, not only very happy, but demand that pictures of their kids appear on the blogs, and they want to, you know, if you ever end up in a situation where you accidentally don't take a picture of everybody doing something, you're going to hear about it from parents, because they want to see their child doing whatever they're doing. And, you know, the other constituency that absolutely love this is grandparents, who maybe are a distance and they can watch their grandchildren doing things at school and so on. So anyway, that's kind of our experience of Weebly. It's the basic website layout and builder is fine for the static pages, but the blogging stuff is just a total mess, and the iOS apps basically don't work. And they had a weird, messy situation as well, where they've had this Weebly Classic app and the Weebly app, and it's never been clear which one of them worked the best. And various times we've had advice to, oh, no, at the moment you've got to use the Weebly Classic app, and then, oh, no, months later they changed something on the back end, and now the Weebly app is the one that works, and the Classic app suddenly randomly stops working. But they're both still in the App Store, and it's like, you know, what am I supposed to do with that, you know? So given that most of the content that goes on those blogs is actually photographic, here's one idea, Bradley, is that we're thinking about changing the blogs, quote-unquote blogs, to classroom Instagram feeds. This was a crazy idea that I had in a fit of total frustration at having another 40 minutes of my morning spent explaining to people why Weebly wasn't working today. And the answer was always, I don't know, because it's rubbish. I thought, well, you know, why not just find, like, we do the same thing with Google Drive, right? We use Google Apps because if Google Apps goes down, a billion people are complaining to Google at the same time, right? Whereas if Weebly breaks down, even Weebly don't care to fix it. So thinking about that, well, what is that platform for, you know, photographs and sharing media? Well, it's Instagram, right? And does Instagram go down? No, right? Does Instagram work in mobile? Yes, absolutely, all the time. With almost total reliability and great features and, you know, prompt support for new things that we do or that Apple does, why don't we just move everything to Instagram? And you know what? After about 20 minutes of talking about it in the staff room, we couldn't really think of a reason not to do it.
You know, I read that. Like, you told me that, like, I think, like, 2 weeks ago. And then, like, I read your notes and I thought, my gosh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it really, really does. You could ease in if you're kind of privacy conscious about it, just make it a private account.
We could certainly do that. That will not work though, because so many people love the class blogs, right? Grandparents, you know, we would spend a lot of time just checking people out and admitting them to the blogs. And I think when we do our privacy statement and so on, we're very open with people about what we do with that information, and we say we put it on this website and that website, and we share it this way, and this bit's public, and people, and we ask people to tick on their information sheet, maybe put pictures of your children on the internet, and, you know, there's no box in that entire form that gets more yes ticks than that one. It's really interesting how the kind of culture's changed around that parents are much more relaxed about that than they've been in the past. As far as I could see, you know, I imagined or I anticipated that if we say Instagram, people are going to have a privacy concern about it. But it's effectively no different to what we've got at the moment, which is that we have blogs on our website where you can go and see what's going on in the classroom. It's, you know, they're not private blogs per se. But for the other objection that people sort of imagined, not actually made, but, you know, teachers sort of anticipated what people would say about it, was that not everybody's on Instagram, which is surprising to me, because in my world, everybody's on Instagram, but I suppose not true everywhere. But of course, if you have a Facebook account, then you can sign into Instagram. And of course, even if you don't want to do that, you still have, of course, a feed where you can go on the web and you can look at an Instagram feed on a website as well. So even for, you know, the most technophobic grandparent, they could at least click a link and they could go and see pictures on a website, which is just exactly the same as what they do now, and that's where it came from. A couple of other things that teachers came up to me with was, well, sometimes on the blog we put out information, you know, we'll put a reminder about something. So let's say there's a school trip going off. They'll put up a reminder, you know, tomorrow's the school trip. You need this, 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 and this. And they were asking, well, how could we do that on Instagram? And I had a couple ideas for that. And one was, well, for a start, you get about 500 words on an Instagram comment post, which I think is, you know, mostly enough for the kind of amount of information they're putting out. But I thought we would also maybe design 4 or 5 custom images that they would just use, consistently use the same image on Instagram for when it's a reminder to check your email, or a reminder about trip uniform, or a reminder about sending a packed lunch or something like that. So that you could actually use it for photographs, but you could also, when there's a kind of alert post or an information post, you could have a specific graphic that you use so that when parents see that, they know that they have to dig into the comment and read what's there. And I think that could work, to be honest.
The thing that kills me about Instagram is, like, you can't have URLs in the comment, in the comments. So, mm-hmm. like, the old trick, and even Apple has to, this is what's funny, like, even these big companies, they just, like, change their homepage link in their bio. So, if okay. you say, hey, guys, like, you know, your books are on sale, you know, link in bio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, what's crazy is, like, Instagram ads can have links in the actual photos. Huh. And I just think that some of that stuff with Instagram has, like, got to evolve. I'm thankful they have, like, multiple account support now. Like, that was huge for us on our day-to-day Instagram usage at our school. But, like, I feel like these, like, you know, having links and things would be nice. I would also like to see schedule. I would love to see scheduled posts on Instagram. Like, all I just schedule posts for schools are great, because you can kind of, like, you know, if you're trying to promote something, you can kind of have it in the can and not just, like, have to do it day of kind of thing.
Yeah, there are kind of, like, third-party services for Instagram that sort of do that. I don't. Most of them are kind of like paid social media management tools, if you like. You know, Buffer for Instagram kind of thing. I don't think Buffer itself actually works with Instagram, but there's basically, like, you know, we are the Buffer for Instagram kind of services, where you can pay for that kind of thing as well. So, I think the thing that unlocks this, right, is that Instagram does have multiple account support, so it's, you know, for teachers who are using Instagram personally, they can also, without too much hassle, they can have it on their phone to post for their classroom as well. And that's the kind of thing that I think it could be made to work. And it certainly, it would improve our teachers' workflow immensely, because it's an easy native mobile tool. And many parents, it would enhance the parents' experience as well, because, you know, for example, if you are a parent who's on Instagram, you can follow your child's class feed on Instagram, even set up a post notification on Instagram so that whenever something goes up on the class feed, you get a notification even right to an Apple Watch about that new picture, so you can go and see it straight away. And for those who are not on Instagram, well, it's not any worse than it currently is, in the sense that you can still go to a website and look at pictures. Which is exactly the experience you have right now. So the longer I think about it, the more I'm thinking there's no reason not to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm really struggling. I mean, just, like, if you want something simple that that's done from mobile devices, like, I'm really thinking you're onto something there. It's very, very simple to use, and I'm just not seeing many, thinking about many negatives.
Can't honestly think of one, to be honest with you. You know, and I think the idea of having like specifically designed custom images for specific special announcement kind of posts, I think that it put to rest a lot of teachers' fears about not being able to do certain things that they do with their blogs at the moment. So, for example, you know, how do we send home this piece of information or that piece of information? Well, in truth, most of the stuff that is the long form stuff that we put on blogs is just repeating stuff we already sent home, either in the kids' school bags or via our MailChimp system as well. So what it could be is Instagram's just used as a reminder to check your school bag and check your email as well. And all the big information is actually in there. So maybe that's the way we do it as well.
Yeah. So lots of different options here. I mean, I think ultimately you just need to look at, like, what your school is going to be able to maintain. I mean, I think that's the key. It's one thing, you can hire anybody to do anything, but what can you maintain in-house and what can you afford to pay someone else to do?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of what led me to Instagram, was it's free. It's running at massive scale. It's super reliable, really easy to use. And I mean, basically the teachers all already know how to use it is the point. And you can also, there are tools around it. So you've got Layout, for example, which is a kind of photo collage app. So teachers ask me, well, you know, how do I put 10 photographs up? Well, I'm thinking, well, maybe you know, combine 3 or 4 pictures into one post. Then you're maybe only putting 2 or 3 posts up rather than 10 separate ones.
Yeah, we were on the field trip today, and like I'd used Instagram's layout app and posted like 10 pictures into one single photo.
You could also, another thing you could do is you could build a GIF from multiple pictures and put that up as a short video. Because that's another thing that, you know, it has been, you know, Weebly in principle does support video hosting, but it literally never ever works for mobile. So short clips or even time lapses on an Instagram feed, I think, would be much more attractive for people than a broken flash video player that doesn't really work showing up on their phone.
So, yeah, lots of good things to do. Summer's a great time to think through this kind of stuff. I mean, you really need to be thinking through it now, and then, you know, can you kind of execute that over the summer. We always like to launch a new website on 8/1, kind of our thing.
That's it. Cool.
So, good place to leave it for this week. Thanks for everybody for listening. Thanks to our sponsors, XMA with the AllEarn solution, and from Jamf Software with the Casper Suite. iTunes.com/out of school, so you can find our iTunes page. Reviews are always appreciated. I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com, and I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.